This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. As many of you may know, June is Pride Month in honor of the Stonewall Uprising of 1969 in New York's Greenwich Village. Recently, demonstrations for the Black Lives Matter movement and Pride have converged, a move that harkens back to Pride's roots as a movement against police brutality and oppression, led by LGBTQ people of color. One of those leaders was Marsha P. Johnson, a gay liberation activist and self-identified drag queen who was keenly aware of the violence and abuse her community was facing. In 1992, her body was found in the Hudson River, and her suspicious death remains unsolved today. In the 2017 Netflix documentary, The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson, director David France follows activist Victoria Cruz as she tries to find out what led to the death of her friend Marsha. To learn more about the documentary, Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with France via Zoom from his home in New York City.
David France, welcome to Lake Effect. Thank you for taking a few moments to speak with me.
Well, thank you for having me.
So the documentary, The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson, dives into the unresolved death of Marsha. But first, I want to concentrate on her life. So who was Marsha?
Marsha was this extremely well-known and beloved figure in New York. She was an early organizer in the community in the 60s. She was considered herself a drag queen, to use the vernacular of the day. And she was kind of a mother to many other young trans people in the city. And she was turned out to be an instrumental figure at the Stonewall Rebellion in 1969. Some have credited her with touching off the rebellion, but what's more true is that when she arrived after the conflagration had already began, she led a fierce flank of people into the fray and is known as one of the frontline battlers that night. But also, after that, she and her comrade Sylvia Rivera joined about a dozen other people to begin building the foundations for the modern LGBT movement that took hold after those riots. And so she's really an architect of so much of what the movement has attained over all these years. And then she and Sylvia also started the world's first transgender organization. They had conceived for the first time ever of transgender people having their own kind of social, cultural, and political needs and concerns and affinities. And in that way, she was a true revolutionary.
Yeah, the organization you refer to is the STAR organization, Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries. And I think it's such a true example of grassroots ingenuity, personal, not just accountability, but motivation and drive. And many people today, you know, within these past few years are becoming more aware of transgender issues. But as you say, with Marsha's example, she was the Rosa Parks of the LGBT movement. And this documentary really shows how longstanding a lot of these issues have been for the transgender community.
Absolutely. If it weren't for her, this whole conversation about gender and gender identity may have been delayed for many years. And it's really apt and appropriate that we're speaking about her and Sylvia Rivera today, the day that the Supreme Court just issued one of the most significant rulings in recent years, in which they make it federal law. It is now illegal to fire people for their transgender identity, as well as to fire gay people and lesbians simultaneously. But it's really a major, major victory at the Supreme Court. And it would be tremendous if both of those historical figures were alive today to see the outcome of the revolution that they started.
Most definitely. So obviously, Marsha holds great significance for the LGBTQ plus community. But what drew you to her story to make this documentary? This documentary more so focuses on the unsolved death of Marsha in 1992.
Well, I should start by saying that I knew Marsha, but she was kind of a mother figure to the community. back in the early days. I moved to New York in the early 80s, and she was one of the first people I was introduced to in the city. It was like, if you wanted to feel like New York was your home as a young gay or lesbian person, you really needed Marcia's blessing in a way. Once we became friends, she was a daily fixture on Christopher Street, which was then the kind of mountaintop of queer life in New York. And then she would call your name day or night and wish you a happy evening. And that made you feel like you had arrived. She really expanded the community by throwing her arms open and bringing people in and making them feel at home. When she died in 92, I remember where I was when I got the news. And I was working at the time at the Village Voice, an alternative newspaper in New York. And I drew the assignment to investigate what might have happened to her. The circumstances were murky, mysterious. The police were very obviously unwilling to investigate. And so I began for a while doing my own investigation into the events of that night in 1992. But for a number of reasons, the principal one being that 1992 was a terrible year for taking a turn in the AIDS epidemic. And my partner at the time grew very sick. I abandoned the story, and my partner died in the winter of that year. And by that time, it was 6 months past her death, and I just never returned to the investigation. And I always felt that it was unfinished business, and that I really owed Marcia's memory the attention that I should be giving to this investigation around her passing. In serious ways, the memory of Marcia had faded, as had the memory of Sylvia, from the kind of the oral histories that we've been passing down to one another in the community. And I wanted to elevate both her life and try and bring justice to her surrounding the matter of her death. But the timing for this was the massive increase in violence against the transgender community over the last decade, especially transgender women of color. And I thought if Marcia's case can go unresolved and unremembered, then what hope did any of these newer and younger victims have of finding justice in their case? So I thought it'd be very symbolic to go back to that time in 1992, and see what sense could be made of.
Throughout the documentary, you go through archival pieces and interviews you collected. And as you mentioned, no police, no city resources dedicated their time to finding out exactly what happened to resolve Marcia's death. And you highlight kind of the picking up of the baton through Victoria Cruz to be our guide through this story. So why was she an effective way to frame the documentary?
Well, Victoria Cruz is, first of all, a major historical figure of her own, was also there on that fateful June night in 1969. And she had devoted her life and her life's work to responding to violence and other crimes against the LGBT community. And as a contemporary of Marcia's, she was one of the people that I first talked to. And she felt that it was at the end of her career, she was about to retire, that she thought that this could be her swan song, that it was something that she could do and something she was driven to do, something she had the skills to do. And she was keen to let me join her in that journey. And she's a tireless investigator and a charming figure. So she really helped bring that story and that time in New York City to life in a way that is so vibrant and human.
During the Stonewall era, you mentioned Sylvia, who claimed the street people and the drag queens were the vanguards of the movement. But as you mentioned, the Pride movement seemed to grow out of touch with this, and only recently are people reacquainting themselves with people such as Marcia. And Sylvia stated in a speech she made at the 1973 Pride that she felt betrayed by the Pride movement, where it was going, that they forgot about people like her and Marcia. How do you see the modern Pride movement relearning this history and also remembering its roots in activism and the trans women who led it.
Well, you're right about that terrible turn in the early years of the movement. STAR was one of the four or five major components of the early movement. And in 1973, just 4 years in, they were evicted from the movement. They were thrown out of the umbrella organization, Gay Activist Alliance, and they were forsaken by the movement that they had helped start. It was a very cruel moment in the history of the movement, one that has not been adequately addressed, I don't think. But that speech that she gives in 1973 is a heartbreaking speech. She had to fight her way onto the stage to defend the role of trans women and street people, as she called them, the marginalized corners of our community, defend their right to be there and to do that work and to be recognized for the work that they had already accomplished. And it did no good. She was booed off the stage and she left the movement for many, came back to the movement after Marsha's untimely death. Marsha was found floating in the Hudson River, and that brought Sylvia back as a kind of a public person, as an activist. But by 1992, the movement in New York had become very kind of commercial. What had been called the Gay Pride March was suddenly being called the Gay Pride Parade, with floats sponsored by credit card companies and local businesses and international businesses. And the tenor changed really dramatically. And that has been a really unfortunate fact about Pride, that Pride has become a kind of a commercial marketing idea. In the recent years, in New York City and in other cities as well, there have been kind of breakaway groups that call themselves Reclaim Pride, who bring back the idea that, as they say, Stonewall was a riot, and they have organized contingents or counter demonstrations to coincide with Gay Pride Day. The Reclaim Pride people have said, inspired by the movement for Black Lives that has really energized so many people throughout the country and even throughout the world, that they are mounting a demonstration on Pride Day this year in New York in defense of Black and Brown lives, in defense of transgender people of color in the community, and against the police violence and police militarization that has been the calling cry now of this new movement as it's swelling in the country.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the Black Lives Matter movement is getting some new, you know, not just allyship, but that pride organizations around the U.S. are realizing we need to get back to this activism and roots and the issues of police brutality against the LGBTQ plus community have been longstanding. It's something Marsha and Sylvia were fighting against and what Stonewall was about. And now there's the influx of including Black trans lives, particularly Black women who are trans, and the violence that has always been against them. And while Marsha's case has been cold, like many transgender cases, most recently there were also two deaths just last week of Rhea Milton and Dominique Fells. So do you believe that there's been any like true significance progress when it comes to bringing visibility to trans lives and the violence against trans women of color especially?
Unfortunately, it's really unfinished business. You know, of all of the archival materials that I found while making the film about Marsha, the most surprising to me and important, I think, was an audio taped interview that Marsha had organized in 1992 of the transgender women who were working in the sex trade along the side of the Hudson River that summer. And they were all being physically tormented by the police. And she had taken it upon herself to call in the media to bring to light the violent treatment that was being handed down by the local police precinct. That, coupled with some other evidence that Victoria Cruz pulls together in the course of the film, leads you to believe that the most likely understanding of what happened to her on the night that she fell into the river was that she was put there or chased there by the police themselves. So this idea of police violence going unanswered has a long history, including especially within the queer community, but the community of color across the board.
You end the documentary with Victoria packing up all of her notes on the Marsha case to hopefully be looked into by someone at the FBI. But there's still no concrete answer, and that was definitely a powerful way to end the documentary. How do you hope this impacts viewers? Because it shows there's no, quote, happy ending after watching this.
Well, the work is still not finished. And I think that we took it as far as we could with the current policies and leadership in the New York City Police Department. And I am really heartened by the progress that's already been made in this short several weeks since the murder of George Floyd across the country. But in New York State, finally, they repealed a law that made it illegal to get any information on allegations of misconduct against police. Now, with that possibility now available to us, I think we're going to finally be able to get into those police files and find out what exactly was going on in that police precinct where Marsha's life had been so endangered, but also across the city and state to find out what the secrets that the police have been keeping from the community and from the people they were meant to serve over all these years, and what stories that they reveal.
People are starting to get to know Marsha again. A whole new generation is learning who she was, especially as the Black Lives Matter marches coincide with Pride and harkening back to its activist roots. How does it make you feel that Marsha is once again at the forefront of Pride?
Well, I think certainly that that's where Marsha belongs and Sylvia belongs. And for the whatever small role I played in it, I'm really pleased to think that people now who never met her, who are born generations after her, now know about Marsha, know about her significant contributions. You know, as a political strategist, she had a very unique approach to creating change, and she did it through joy and glee, really, as her kind of political sword and shield. And as we move forward now in this new thrust in our efforts to defend social justice, I hope that we can learn from those tools of hers to help us as we move forward. And she's such a transformative figure that I believe that we all need to know about her. And I think she's really one of those canonical political forces that should be in all history books.
Well, your documentary certainly helps in that effort. And David France, I want to thank you for your time today to speak about it.
Thank you, Audrey.
David France is the director of the Netflix documentary, The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson, streaming now. He spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski.